Now with Pfizer, I think I've been able to shift my mindset towards health and wellness, towards more of a journey than a destination, where I'm more focused today on how do I make small daily decisions that will make me feel good.
Hello, everybody. We have a very special guest here today, and it's actually going to be a two-parter episode. So if you follow So Good, if you follow me, you definitely have seen Pfizer's name before. And it's been a long time that I've stalked them, worked with them, donated with them. So I'm really excited to have both of the founders on. They're another family-founded company. We are going to get into it with first and most important... Sam Pantazopoulos.
That was great. That was perfect pronunciation.
Yes. Let's go. You say it.
Pantazopoulos.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, you did it right. It was great.
Okay. Samantha, dear Sam, I actually met you for the first time at Expo West.
And going back to the stalking comment, I feel like the stalking was mutual.
Okay, if it's mutual stalking, it's allowed. That's also in the CPG space. There's so much stalking before you actually meet someone, I feel.
It's because it's such a small world. Yeah. I feel like everybody knows everybody and everybody you meet is great. So you mm-hmm. want to know everybody.
Back to the stalking. We met for the first time at Expo West, which is like the Super Bowl of trade shows for CPG companies. It is the biggest and most overwhelming, dare I say, but still a lot of fun. You get to meet amazing people. And I went to Pfizer's happy hour soiree. And I love telling this story. I had also known nobody, so I was terrified of going, but everyone was so nice and you were so nice. And Sam came and did like this beautiful speech. And she was like, we're all here because we're so dedicated to just making a positive impact in the world. And how beautiful is it that we're all together? And Dylan goes up and says, hey guys, so there's limitless tacos and drinks. So have a great night. Thanks. Bye.
That's why we perfectly balance each other, because you definitely get both sides of the equation.
And I just loved that from the get-go. And I was like, Sam and I, we're going to be gals. I also love another family-founded company. So I've always loved that component of Pfizer. And I'm excited to dive more into Sam. So Sam, give us the never-before-told story of how Pfizer started.
The never-before-told story. That is a great question. I'll have to see where I can carve out like little pockets of new information. But how the idea originally came was in college. So I was studying abroad on a program. It was called Semester at Sea. Mm-hmm. It's like a cruise ship. And
this is like Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
It is.
You go to adults.
10 countries in 100 days. And when you're in the country, you're traveling and just kind of exploring the area. But when you're on the ship, then you have class. So that was kind of the setup at the time. And they had a social venture incubator. I ended up going to this program and learning about social entrepreneurship and how you could use business to solve social problems. And that was interesting to me because prior to college, even, I was looking at public policy and business as kind of like these two paths that I thought were really interesting to pursue, but I ended up going for business. And then this was kind of a marriage of the two. Mm-hmm. So I'm in this business program and the advisor says, pick an idea that you personally care about and in something that feels personal. Because there's like a million things that you could care to solve in the world. But if you don't identify with it, then it's harder to stick with it when it gets really hard.
I love that.
And I was like, okay. And then I almost say it was like an intuitive download. It was weird. Like it just popped into my head. Like, what if every day you worked out, you had the opportunity to donate a meal, and then in doing so, you could earn rewards for yourself? It was like a very specific...
Where were you when this happened?
Framework.
I imagine you taking a walk down some like Italian coast and...
Not even. I'm on the ship.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So we're on the ship. There's no internet. And it's me and maybe 30 other students that had participated in this club. And I always thought it was really cool because there were a lot of countries represented in the students that were on the program. But obviously the U.S. was the majority of the students versus the club. It was very switched. Oh. So it was primarily international students, I felt. So it was a cool mix of people and everybody had different ideas. But we're sitting in a circle, like announcing our ideas to the room. And then I announced mine. And that was really the beginning. But it took me several years to figure out like why that had come up for me in that season. I knew that I had struggled with healthy habit formation. I was in a season of really restricting my food. I had a very unhealthy relationship with nutrition. And I just remember like all of these big questions swirling of why is it so hard to work out? And why is it so hard to find resources or education or anything like that?
And so Visor was what popped into your mind first.
Yep.
Was it daunting? Well, it didn't start. Did it start out as an app?
It was always going to be an app.
Was that daunting not having a background in tech?
I always like to say that we've been blindly naive to how challenging things would be.
That's what every entrepreneur says. If they knew how hard it would be, they never would have done it.
And we were just confident. We're like, we'll figure it out. So I come back and I share the idea with Dylan and he loves it. And then series of events happen. We end up working together on it. We both start full time after I graduate from school. And no, we had no tech background. And we had no budget on top of that. So I'm going to these development agencies and I'm saying, hey, here's the idea. And you know, this is how we see people using it. We're really excited. And they told me it was going to be $100,000.
Wow.
To build it out. And I'm 20.
Just have it in my back pocket.
Right? I was like, I didn't have like $10. ended up having
couple
to learn.
Couple more zeros.
Exactly.
Go.
Ended up just having to learn, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Like, what skills do we have? And it's funny you mentioned the camera work and YouTube. Like, we went on YouTube.
YouTube University.
Yeah.
Many masters through that. How did you loop Dylan into this? Was he someone that you automatically had on your mind?
So when I was participating on the program in the ship environment, I recruited my roommate and her boyfriend, a friend of ours at the time, because you had to have a team. Mm. But neither of them really wanted to do it outside of that environment. Dylan was one of the first people I saw when I left the ship because his family lived in California. We had been very close throughout college. So I saw him and I was telling him the idea and it just like, I feel like fireworks. Like I'm saying things and he's like getting it. We're going back and forth. To this day, it was one of the best conversations I've had with somebody about sharing the idea. And we just talked about it and I was like, well, I'm going to do it full time. And then he was like, well, I want to do it. And then we ended up doing it together. But it was a very organic kind of evolution, like just from conversations we've been having.
So you've had no job between college and Visor. This was your first job.
There was a brief stint.
Okay.
So I have the idea junior year.
Yeah.
Senior year, I'm starting to get some doubts.
Mm-hmm.
All my friends are getting jobs.
Yeah.
Maybe I should get a job.
That's such a tough time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So like, all your friends are probably going to like networking events. Well, you probably are too, but just all those types of events to find jobs. And you're like, well.
Totally. And they're locking in their careers and their benefits packages and their salaries and
signing bonuses.
They're going to get their first apartment. And like all of these things are happening. And I had started to doubt kind of the entrepreneurial path. I was like, maybe I should get some experience first. Variety of things happen. I end up in an interview talking about Visor. And one of the interviewers says, well, you seem to really like that. Why don't you do that? Yeah. I was like, okay. that was pretty much all the push I needed. So then I ended up working for my dad, who had a restoration company, like flooring and water damage and mold damage in Maryland for a few months to make enough money to pay my rent when I got back to San Diego. And then I would freelance at night doing legal research to pay my bills.
Interesting.
Like the first year plus that we were building the app.
That I haven't heard that before. So a little untold story. What was it like in those first few months of Visor, you and Dylan?
It was a blast.
Okay.
Honestly, it was a lot of work and it was a lot of doors closing, I think, because we didn't even have a product in 2018. It was really just an idea. And I remember we would tell people like, you're going to work out and then you get to donate and then you get to earn rewards. And it wasn't clicking.
Yeah.
Like something in the messaging or how we were talking about it wasn't really hitting quite yet. But we did meet enough of the right people. I like to call them connectors who were like, I see what you're trying to do here. And I can offer something, whether it's an insight or an introduction, that's going to open up one more door for you.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of able to keep making progress forward. And I think because it was the two of us, we were able to kind of like reflect at the end of the night together and maybe have a glass of wine. And like, it was fun. Where I always think being a solo founder, would be very, very challenging. And
I never understand how people are solo founders. It's insane. It's like the motivation alone that you have to keep like going in the hard times. You don't have anyone to complain to or cry to or like eat your feelings with. I mean, it's still crazy to me that you didn't really have a full job experience before just founding a company at the age of, how old are you? 20?
I was 20.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. How has being a young CEO and founder been for you?
I love what I do. Yeah. I'm really grateful for that. We have an amazing team and it's very collaborative. So like everything we do is the product of the team more so than it is anything that I'm doing. And I think I've had people that have been very gracious as I've learned different lessons, and we all kind of recognize that we're working towards the same goal. So it's a lot of fun and we're growing every day, I think, professionally, but we're also growing every day personally. So it's like,
That's nice.
This like growth environment.
Yeah. Cause you are all, their entire office and team is pretty young. It kind of spans, but.
Yeah, definitely. And very kind of organic too in how we've found different team members.
Also, I've heard stories of like how people have begged you to get onto your team. And like, that's just so nice to have people who really wanted to be on your team and really had to be like, hi, Sam, it's been a few months. Can I come on?
It's happened. Yeah, I've had people send like full kind of content briefs via email of like what they would do in the role, or find me at events. Yeah. And for those people that I'm thinking of, there are a handful of them. We're not that large of a team. We went and made a role for them. So it was like, okay, like we're a startup. Everybody's wearing different hats. But if you care that much, then yeah, I want you on the team. Like, let's figure something out. And there are people that have reached out that have a similar energy that I would like love to be able to loop in. We just are scaling at the size that we can.
I've always been of the mindset when I'm hiring, if someone is that energize and doesn't take no for an answer and are that passionate, eventually we're going to find a way to bring you on.
Exactly.
If I have to make a role for you, I will. How has it been managing a team and going from being a student to being a boss?
I know I keep saying these things are fun, but I really think that they are. There are obviously seasons that are challenging, which is you're a startup and you're figuring out things for the first time. And you know, we've seen so many massive market shifts over the last few years. If you look at COVID, for example, like we had a whole strategy for how we were going to roll out our rewards marketplace through restaurants. And we were ready to move out of San Diego and go to these other cities. And that was March of 2020.
Tough time.
So all of a sudden,
that did not happen.
Did not happen. Our restaurant partners massively impacted. It's like, what can we do to be supportive over here? But then internally, you had a whole team of people that were working towards one goal. And now that goal has been very, very shifted for factors outside of our control.
Yeah.
So when I look at situations like that, it's like, okay, how are you showing up for yourself in that process? And then how are you showing up for the team in that process? And how do your tools and the even like the goals and the accountability all map to that? So it almost feels like fitness, where you train the muscle of leadership the more that you do it.
The startup muscles.
Yeah. It's like a toolbox, or like a skill that you acquire today is going to be very, very painful as you learn it potentially. But a year from now, it's going to serve you 10 times over.
That is That just hit for me. Yeah. I mean, I came into this space having no idea about anything related to startups and business and freeze drying and CPG. And then it's so painful, I guess, in like your first year, 2 years. And then those lessons, they just are tools you use for the next decades of your life.
And I have so much respect for you. We always say like CPG, recipes, fresh foods, anything with storage or warehousing is like a whole different skill set than what we've acquired.
I'd rather our product lived in the cloud. How has being young impacted your discussions with people in our industry? Do you feel like that's an advantage being younger? Sometimes it's a disadvantage. People don't take you seriously.
It really depends. I think the CPG industry is actually one of the more favorable ones towards young founders. We work in several industries, consumer tech and healthcare and corporate, and there's like all of these different spaces that we find ourselves in. there have definitely been conversations where I know that our age was the determining factor in how those conversations went. But I think there have been infinitely more conversations where it was an advantage.
Yeah.
Where people were like, wow, this is exciting. And you know, you're young and you're passionate about this. And I want to do what I can to help you. And I've always thought if I was having the same conversation at 40, like it may be a bit more challenging to build that kind of support.
Yeah.
So I remember I would email people cold all the time, be like, recent college graduate, would love to get together for coffee. And I had graduated like 3 years prior, which I guess is still recent, but like I didn't graduate yesterday. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, would love to connect. And people were so willing to. So I think it's been an advantage, but it's also been, you like, you know, regardless of what the factor is, whether it's like age or gender, like you can usually tell in conversations mm-hmm. when that is a deciding factor and how somebody is like conversing with you.
You kind of have to decide like in the moment, is this like read the room? How is this person perceiving me? And are they picking up what I'm putting down?
And I have found that some of our most successful conversations have actually come from like going straight through the needle of like, if I come into a conversation and there was a situation where I had been underestimated, I think it's really easy to shut down in those instances. And a lot of people do. But I find if you double down and it's like, hey, let's, you know, I'm not going to be offended by that per se, but let's continue our conversation and let's get to a point where you and I are at least speaking about the same subject matter. I have found that the kind of the capital that you build, like the social capital in that of going from where you were underestimated to now where you can take the conversation, those relationships actually turned out to be some of the strongest.
I have felt that similarly when I have conversations with buyers and retailers. I'm our director of sales and I'm probably like the youngest. And so when people talk to me, they just see that I'm a young person trying to get into their stores. But after having a conversation with them and asking as insightful questions as you can, and honestly, like trying not to seem like you're pitching them, just seem like you're just young and you just really want to do something positive and you're really passionate. I found that people are really attracted to that. And I used to be really insecure about my age, but now I just use it as another tool because people naturally are going to be drawn to your passion and want to help you and use their experience to help you get more.
Mm-hmm. Totally love that. And I find I often don't know people's ages. Like I'll think somebody's in their mid to late 20s and they're 40.
Yeah. What would you describe is your style for being a manager and director?
So my dad is an entrepreneur and Dylan's mom is an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And I worked for both of them. Middle school, high school, college, post-college. And they had similar management styles, very different companies and like very, very different setups, but similar management styles, which is I trust you to do what you need to do. I want to give you the resources to do what you need to do, but I don't want to like babysit or police your time. So I am a big believer that like in terms of management, you can work wherever you want. You can work whatever hours you want, as long as we are all held accountable to like the same goals and we know where we're going. I think a lot of startups will say that they have like remote work and flexible policies, but I really try to encourage it where I don't think like working the most is what makes people the most successful. I think working the smartest is what makes people the most successful.
I feel like I'm talking to my mom. That's what she says all the time.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
I think it's so important because we're a wellness company at the end mm-hmm. of the day, and the whole concept of Visor is if you're not properly nourished, if you're not moving your body often, if you're not sleeping well, if you're not hydrated, then you can't go do any of those other upper level functions like showing up well at work or showing up well in school or like having good communication in your personal relationships. So I think it's the same with the company where it's like, I really want to make sure that people are doing well in life. Like I want them to physically and mentally and emotionally like be doing well. And then that's how I think they show up the best at work. So we do a ton of like, again, like personal and professional development kinds of things in yeah. the company.
You guys do a lot. It's fun to watch.
We try.
Yeah. I feel like from like different events or just like internal like meetings and things like that. just me stalking on the outside again, keeping tabs on them. I just feel like you guys have a really good energy and balance in life at work.
We try, because it's like our, as a startup founder, your life is so tied to it.
Yeah.
And I would never ask or expect like anybody on the team to have that level of contribution to it. But I think like the habits that we model are the habits that will be expected. Mm. So if I say like, yes, I want this flexible policy, but then I don't show up that way, yeah, it makes it hard for other people to think that they should be utilizing it. So I really try to be vocal about like the why it's there and the intent and like all of those things, and then hope that it works out that way.
Most difficult thing for me going from, I've always been like a student and then an employee, so I was never like a manager. I was always growing to that position, and I guess that's why my parents felt comfortable putting me in that level. But I love being the person to do something. I love being the person to have a vision and then execute it. And for the first few months, it was really hard for me to not micromanage or not just do everything myself. Mm-hmm. How do you feel in that position?
It depends on the task.
Some tasks, I'm like, you guys can handle that all day.
I was going to say, like, there are things that I'm not good at.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not good at them. Yeah. I can do them, but like, spreadsheets is not my flow state, let's call it. So when Nick, our COO, joined the team, I was happy to like hand off some of those things and really clearly identify like, okay, like what are my strengths and what are Dylan's strengths and the rest of the team, and try to slot people accordingly. But like marketing, branding, design, I just personally love. Mm-hmm. Like I have a ton of fun in that like creative space, but my head of marketing is a much better marketer than I am. Like when it comes to looking at the actual metrics of things and even creative campaigns, I just like it so much that I find it hard sometimes.
But you're like, I'm just going to be involved. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, how do I try to like back up and say, okay, what's the most productive use of time here?
Yeah.
Like what resources should be where? And then let's try to be accountable to that. But sometimes it's hard. I think when you're like, you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
You just have ideas and it's like, oh, see, I try to stop myself from that.
Yeah. I think it's a secret task that people don't, a secret skill that people don't realize, being able to direct and effectively direct and recognize the skills that each of your team members have, and to have a vision, effectively communicate, and then let them just have their own little version of that.
Totally. Because the vision, in my opinion, gets stronger every time somebody starts to work on it. So it's like, we are launching this creator community, the Daily Wellness Club, and super stoked about it. It's been a ton of fun to build out. But I remember when I kind of did the first table vision board for it, I would start inviting the creators over and I was like, okay, this is 50% of where it needs to be. Like it's like 50% good enough. So everybody that came added an idea, added an insight, added a direction. And now I feel like it's so robust because 30 people contributed to making it what it is, versus when I was doing it in a silo, it was only 50%. It's enough, technically.
Is this an actual vision board?
It was a whole table.
I see that about you. Yeah. I was like, some people would talk about that figuratively, but I have a feeling Sam actually had an entire situation going on.
It was printed out, cutted, like a whole collage. It was great.
Dylan's like, what did you do today? You're like, arts and crafts.
Actually, though.
What do you feel like before Visor you struggled with that since starting Visor has helped you?
I had a terrible relationship with health and wellness prior to Visor.
Yeah. Actually, let's dive into that.
Yeah.
What was your relationship with exercise and food before Visor?
Terrible.
Okay. Great.
So growing up, I never played sports. Like I had really bad asthma as a child. So I was a straight A student. Like I was this like type A overachiever. Mm-hmm. And I had asthma and like couldn't effectively like perform in gym class. And I hated the idea of that. So I would like skip out on gym class. It was this thing. I would like go to the nurses or something. And I started to train this idea that like I was not somebody who was active. So then I almost took that as like a part of my personality.
Yeah.
Where come to high school, I was like, oh, I don't play sports. Like it's just not something that I do. So I get to college and I had never built the skill set of like how to be active. And I didn't really know what to do. My lifestyle, as college students often experience, shifted towards unhealthy eating, and there was a lot of partying involved. And I knew that I needed to start exercising, but I really couldn't figure out like how to do it. So when I was going to the gym and I was hating it, I was like, well, what if I just start restricting my food? Like if I eat less, then I won't have to do this working out thing. And they started to kind of grow in tandem, where I was like, okay, I'm eating less and I'm still trying to make myself work out, and then I have no energy. And it was just, you know, a year of that, 2 years of that. And by the time I get to semester at C, I'm like so depleted, where I would be eating, you know, 50 calories going to the gym and trying to burn off 200, and then considering that like a net neutral. And I was like, okay, now I can wait, you know, as long as possible. And I just learned like how that mindset is conditioned, I think, over years of what we've been like commoditized into believing from marketing or from media messages or from anybody who's out talking about health and wellness from a commercial lens, typically, that health is a destination, that it should be hard, and it's something that we have to like persist through to see results. So if you see a lot of the magazines, it's, you know, do this for 90 days, force the habit until it feels comfortable, suffer to see success. And I could never understand that. So it's like, why are these things that are good for us so hard for us to do? And when you look at all the dynamics, I think a lot of it has to do with mindset. A lot of it has to do with how we have been taught health and wellness should look, and this end goal that was probably never even ours to begin with. So that was all prior to Visor. Now with Visor, I think I've been able to shift my mindset towards health and wellness, towards more of a journey than a destination, where I'm more focused today on how do I make small daily decisions that will make me feel good. Like, how do I move a little bit today? How do I eat something that's nourishing rather than healthy? Because I think those are like different connotations in my mind. How do you prioritize your mental health and your emotional health to balance with physical health? Because what's one without the other? So like all of these things came together purely through me working on this for 5 years and being like heavily invested in this space. Now the goal of Visor is like, how do we take all of those shared learnings and make it super simple and easily delivered? So when somebody uses the app, they can also have that experience without like all of the trauma of having to learn it the hard way.
Yeah.
I think is really the goal.
Thank you for sharing all of that. I think I think you're touching on things that are so difficult to talk about. And it's something that so many people have struggled with, and you just struggle in silence and suffer in silence. And I think the beautiful thing about Visor is you guys are creating a community, and you can't suffer in silence anymore. You get to interact with people and talk about wellness, and you guys get to walk together, work out together, and just bring so much energy and passion. So coming from someone who also was obsessed with like the goals of like the weight or the amount of eating that you could do, you make it a lot more fun. And you focus on people and not numbers, which is nice.
Totally. Because it's community at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like it's choices at the end. It's our lives.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And I think I read somewhere it was like women on average spend like over a year of their life worrying about weight. And when you think about that, like why?
Yeah.
Why is that the focus and the attention versus actual health indicators?
Yeah.
Like how are we feeling in our bodies? What are the choices that we're making?
Do you struggle with perfectionism?
Yes. Great question. So I wouldn't have identified it as that until I read The Gifts of Imperfection.
Okay.
By Brené Brown. Have you read that?
No.
It's really good.
I feel like I've seen you quote it on LinkedIn though.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was a great book because one of the hooks that she has in it is like, I'm a recovering perfectionist.
Yes.
And it's, I think I'm a designer. Like I like art and I like creativity, but I design in Figma. It's like a very pixel perfect
kind
of design environment. So yes, I would say that's probably an accurate descriptor.
I think you and I also have had very similar paths. We're in similar spaces. I was also like very neurotic in school. If I was not doing well, it was just the end of the world for me. And my mental state was always dependent on, did I achieve something today? Did I accomplish something? Did I get an A on this or did I get a C? Okay, then that's going to determine the mood I'm in. Did I work out today? Did I gain weight today? All of those things determined what I was going to feel about myself. And I feel like coming to So Good, I've since done so many things to change that about myself. And my parents were always the biggest on me not being a perfectionist and getting sleep instead of staying at the library and enjoying working out, enjoying playing tennis rather than only thinking I can do a certain type of workout. Just so many small things like that added up to just really drastically improving my life to the point where like now it's the best it's ever been because of those small changes. And I feel like, especially for people who struggle with perfectionism, everything around eating and exercise becomes a lot more magnified and interrelated.
It's really like, what is your actual goal?
Yeah.
And that's something big that we've been trying to like unpack through the app is for you personally, what is your ideal daily wellness routine look like? That will change every day. Like you'll want something different today than you want tomorrow. And then you want the next day. But we've gotten out of the habit of asking ourselves the question of what we want. We're just optimizing for these like external validations or external factors or things we picked up from other places. So it's like when you kind of, one thing I found to help with perfectionism is like really defining, how do I judge success? What's going to make me feel fulfilled?
Yeah.
And then let me optimize for that.
Yeah.
And it's usually a much lower bar than where you started.
Yeah. Which always killed me having to do that. But you and my mom would really get along. You already do. But my mom would tell me, and especially at the beginning of So Good, I thought like, I'm going to get us into Whole Foods in 2 months. Easy. It turns out that is not possible. Nobody can do that in 2 months. But I was like, I had a long list of things. And in my first week at So Good, I had a breakdown. Like, I am failing. My parents are going to fire me. I am not good at this. And my mom sat me down and was like, first of all, Lexi, let's calm down for a second. Second, let's reframe your idea of failure. Just because you didn't do something right the first time doesn't mean you failed. Just means that you found a way, it didn't work, and you can fail forward and find a way to make it work the next time you do this. If you didn't achieve something today, did you figure out how to achieve it going forward? And that was kind of mind-blowing to me. I was like, I can reframe my thoughts to be positive and gracious.
Yeah. Mindset is everything. I love that she said that. I think that's so huge because we say something similar to our team where it's like, I'll tell them, figure out how you define success.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, well, you're my boss. How do you define success? I think that's important. And I'm like, how I define success is if you care and if you try.
Yeah.
Because if you care and you try, then we will end up somewhere positive.
Yeah.
It's when people don't care and they didn't try. That's when I get triggered. I'm like, okay, what are we doing here? If you care and you try, like you said, like you're going to learn something. And that insight could have been what you needed to do 10x what you had planned.
What has been one of the most rewarding parts of Visor and seeing this community that you formed?
I think the community has been the most rewarding part. You have the community of people who are actively using it. You have the community of people who are the recipients of the donations. You have the community of people that are the brands that are like powering everything and making it possible. But all of them had to say like, yes, we think this is important. And yes, we want to be a part of this. And everybody's giving something and everybody is receiving something. So it's this like symbiotic exchange of all of these different people that never would have connected otherwise. So I remember like when we hit certain specific milestones, like a million workouts turned into meal donations.
That's crazy.
It was crazy. Yeah. I remember, but 10,000 was crazy.
Yeah.
Like those, they get bigger over time. So it's big in your scale of reference.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, but specifically at the million, I'm like, okay, a million workouts had to happen. So that means like, I'm picturing like a million pairs of feet, like on earth.
So cute. Like
walking, right? And it's like a million meals.
Yeah.
So like the individual thought of that, like person to person, I just remember it felt so, so expansive. And I was like, well, if we can do a million, we can do 100 million. If you can do 100 million, you can do a billion. And then you could really have this like ripple effect across the world. So that was, I think, the moment for me that I was like, okay, the pieces all fit together.
I love that. I think that's something I'm trying to work into my mindset too, because for example, we just launched into Aldi, which is exciting.
Which is massive.
It should be. It is. It is exciting. But I automatically think, okay, that's step one. Step two is selling. Step three is having them place another order. Step four is more products.
So my friend Keisha, she has a great podcast, Empower Her. She sat me down when I was doing exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
But subconsciously, at least you have the awareness. I was subconsciously doing it at lunch. And she stopped me. And what she said is like, if this is not exciting to you, she's like, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened to you at the time. She was like, so if this is not exciting to you, it's not going to get more exciting. She's like, you're just going to get desensitized, actually.
Oh.
As bigger things happen.
I need to talk to her.
Yeah, she's great. I'll connect you. But she was like, find a way. She's like, celebrate the moment. She's like, write down one thing that I love. She said, write down the things that scare you.
Okay.
And when something pops up, say you're giving a speech, 5,000 people, first time talking to a big audience. You would write like, okay, I have to give a speech to 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Because one day that won't be scary to you.
Yeah.
And it won't seem exciting.
Yeah.
But when you can go back and read through like, oh, all these things I was afraid to do and all of them I did.
Is everyone taking notes at home? Because that's such a good one.
Yeah. And I have like a little list.
I'm sure you do.
Has stuff on it.
How closely tied is Visor's success to your image of yourself?
That's a great question. I think when we were first starting, it was so intertwined that it was problematic.
Yeah.
Where I had so much of my identity like tied up in the company.
Like there is no line between you and Visor.
There was no line. And I slowly learned how to like remove myself from it, which was important for two reasons. One, like if you're too intertwined with it as a founder, I think you actually start to bottleneck everything. Or like restrict it from being everything that it can be. So going back to the idea of like everybody who touches it makes it stronger, like part of that is stepping back. But I think the second reason is like if your personal identity can't be tied up in your work. And it's so easy for it to be, I think, as a startup founder, if something that you love and it was like an idea that you had. But as big as your company can be, and as impactful as it can be, like at the end of the day, you go home to your life.
Yeah.
Like, and I just realized I didn't want to live a life where every minute of every day was consumed by thoughts of work. Because if that were to go away for some reason, then like what would I have to look at, you know?
Yeah.
So like family is super important to me. Like my relationships are really important to me. And I hadn't been prioritizing them and making space in the way that I should have. So I was able to kind of like separate those things.
Yeah.
And now have a much healthier balance. But in the beginning, painfully intertwined.
I feel like I'm a couple months behind you because everything that you're saying, I'm like just at the precipice of that like turning point. I still feel like whether So Good succeeds or not is deeply intertwined with my self-worth, because it's just when you're so passionate about something and you want it, and it's like raising a child, although I know nothing about that, but that's what it feels like. You just tie everything into that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to separate that and think, when I go home, what am I going to go home to?
One way to kind of color in the lines about that is like, imagine the most unrealistic scenario. Like,
mm-hmm.
So I'll tell people on our team, like,
COVID.
Like the app store could go away.
Yeah.
Apple could shut down the app store and we're an app.
Yeah.
Like it's incredibly unlikely.
Yeah.
But there's a like 0.00001% chance that something like that could happen. But to show like there is purpose to having separation between the two and not being like so tied up.
So what are the things that draw you back to who Sam is outside of Visor?
So I realized at the beginning of COVID that I didn't really have hobbies.
Oh my God. It's like looking into a mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I feel that.
I guess I did, but they were work hobbies. Like I loved digital design, but I was using all of my hours digital designing to make things for Visor. So I was like, okay, that's still kind of work.
Yeah.
And I made this vision board. Big on visuals.
Of course.
And I
episode title. The vision board.
The vision board. The vision.
With Sam Pantazopoulos.
And I made this. It was really pretty. It was this like gold wire.
Do you still have it?
I have a picture of it.
Okay, great.
Like hanging thing. And I cut out 20 pictures and I was like, okay, these are all the things that I want to prioritize in my life. And like, I didn't play piano at the time, but I put like learn how to play piano.
Yeah.
And now I love playing piano. It like is so like peaceful and it's like therapy to me. I had almost no connection to God or spirituality or anything. And now I have a very strong one, like grew in my faith. So there are all of these things where I was like, I'm not making time for my friends and family.
Yeah.
I need to do that.
Yeah.
I don't. And it's hard when like Dylan's one of my best friends. We're family. We work together. It's very easy to spill into Christmas.
Yep.
But it's really important that's we're not talking about Visor at Christmas, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So just being mindful, and then I would kind of like start to build my days around it. But I think now if you asked people in my life, like, okay, what are the 5 to 10 things that you would use to define Sam?
Yeah.
You would see those other things pop up. She plays piano. She likes to read. Like she loves the beach. Versus I think if you asked them 5 years ago, would have been she works on Visor all day.
Yeah.
And which is fine. And I think it was important for that season.
Yeah.
But really figuring out like, okay, who am I? Same as the daily wellness thing. Who am I? What are the things that I enjoy? What fills me up? And then how do I put more of that in my day?
My mom like made me start doing things outside of So Good, which was really hard at first. And I came from a job too that was like 90-hour work weeks and very intensive. And I loved that. And to use your term, season. That was just a season of my life. And I think that was very necessary for me at that time and to who I am today. But my mom, when I started So Good, she got me a piano, a little keyboard. And because it's something that I always loved doing as a kid, and I loved painting as a kid. And I never did that outside of art class. And then when you go to college, I wasn't going to take an art class. I was going to take things that actually related to my studies and whatever career I wanted at the time. So I feel like hobbies have been so nice to pick up. I do tennis every morning, which is something that I had quit in high school because I was like, I'm not going to be good enough to play in college. So what's the point of it? How is this going to benefit me? And my mom was like, do you enjoy it? And I was like, yeah, I love it. And she's like, So why don't you do that? And so I feel like joining So Good, and sounds like you similarly, taking on hobbies that might not be your career, might not make you money. You might need to spend money on it, but it's just something that replenishes you.
And it's really important too. Like, you don't have to be good.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be an amazing painter.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an amazing piano player.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the best tennis player. It quite literally doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You could be terrible, but if you enjoy it, then go ahead, like paint all day.
That's another component of what I love about Visor. I feel like you guys, like you don't need to be the most athletic. You can literally just go on a walk. That's all you need to do. Just go on a walk, and you can have such a positive impact in doing that. We're going to end on a smoothie toast. All right, we've got our smoothies. I have my Acai of Relief. Sam has
the Berry Best.
Berry Best, because she is the Berry Best. Really, Sam, I have been so excited to talk with you. You are going to go far, and I love the community you're building, and I've loved just getting to chat more with you. I think people are going to take a lot away from this, and I feel like you're just going to keep making a positive impact with everyone you meet.
Well, thank you. I feel the same about you. I'm glad that I was able to take you to your first In-N-Out.
Oh, yes.
Here in California. Super stoked for everything to come. I think there's a lot that we can do together, and I'm excited.
So with that, Sam, give the listeners and the viewers some words of advice. We love ending with some advice on how to sow goodness in their communities, health, wellness. What do you have for them?
Oh, words of advice. I think that's fun. I think if people just believed in their own potential and were committed to doing small things every single day to like show up for themselves and show up for the world, people would feel so expanded. So I think my advice would be like, if there is something that's on your heart, or there's something that you want to try, there's something you want to do, whether that's like a new hobby or a company or just really anything, like know that you can do it. I think sometimes people just need to hear that. Like, you can do it. Just take a few steps and then eventually you'll end up where you want to go. Get out of the headspace of like overanalyzing and just start moving.
And with that, cheers.
So good.
Sam, good job.
Did we crush it?